Hey, you're so welcome to the Roundtable Podcast. And today we have the honor of having Billy Edgehill here with us today. And we also have my wife, Gillian, for the very first time. Do you want to say hello, Gillian?
Hello, Sean.
Both are very nervous, but we're going to have a great time together. And we're really going to be focusing on Billy and Billy's story, which is really so impactful. And we got to hear a little bit of your testimony on our RTE Sunday service just recently, last month. And both Gillian and Billy have a great story and connection and have walked through together in these last 15 years. And so I just want to kind of... 15 years. I just want to walk through a little bit of the journey together and just be able to share with people exactly what you've gone through and how you're here today. So, Billy, firstly, anyone who's going to hear your voice will know that it's not an Irish voice, though there's an Irish twang to it. Where are you from? Where do you come from?
I come from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in America. And, yeah, I was born and reared there and never left until I came here. Well, no. That's not true. I went to New York, but
so tell us a little bit about your history, your background. You've got an incredible story and testimony. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I had a good childhood. I went to school, and around 17, I just started kind of smoking pot and getting into bad stuff. And I graduated high school by the skin of my teeth, like barely graduated, but I graduated. And then as I got older, I just got dumber, to be honest. Well, I met someone and then started taking painkillers, and that led to heroin, and that led to crack cocaine. And then my life was just, I lost so many jobs, apartment, and
And so how many years ago was this then?
That was 17 years ago.
17, okay. And so you found yourself at that place in the middle of addiction. What did you do? What happened next?
After I started stealing from my mom, because I had to move back in with her, and she was like, get help or get out. And she was praying for me the whole time, and she just was like, you have to get help or get out. That's it. So I called a place on December 23rd called the Hoving Home in New York, in Garrison, New York, and they accepted me straight away. I did an interview over the phone. And I went there December 28th, 2003. And my life changed forever when I went there.
I knew anyone who doesn't know, the Walter Hoving Home is the very first teen challenge home in America for a Christian recovery for addiction.
Yeah, it's a Bible-based rehab.
And so is that where you came to know Jesus?
Well, I came to know Jesus. I was 13 when my mom became a Christian. But I would just go to church because I had to, and that was pretty much my Christian walk. I would read the Bible every now and again, even through my addiction. But yeah, when I got to the Hoving Home, that's when I had my first encounter with Jesus, and I knew that this was it.
And what was that like, going from being an addict, going into recovery? What was that whole process?
It was, first, I didn't like girls at the time. Like, I just... And there was 55 women in this home. And I was like, no way. So when we got there, my mom, she put the child locks on when she was driving me because she thought I was going to escape, but I wasn't going anywhere. So she dropped me off, and she, when you get there, you can't have any contact. I think it's 30 days or, 30 days you can't have contact or anything. So when she dropped me, when I got there and realized there's 55 women, no way, I'm not going to do this. And then... I was really, really, really mean at the time, and people would come up and say, don't worry, you'll get through this. And I'm like, that drove me crazy, but it's true that, and now where I am, that I can say that to other people. But when I got there, my mom, when I first called my mom, she said that she prayed when she was driving down the driveway, Lord, if you need to take her now, you can take her. She's safe. And I didn't know that she thought I was going to die in my addiction. So we used to get up and have a chapel service after breakfast, and I was worshiping, and I had my hands lifted, and I just saw, this is the first and only time this has ever happened, Jesus, clear as day, there, putting his arms out to me, like, come to me. And I knew right then and there, I was signed up for the 6 months, and that moment I was like, no, let's stay for the year. I need this.
That's amazing. And so, Jill, how did you end up meeting Billy? What was that like?
Well, I had been doing the program in Ireland, and Billy, you would have been towards the end of your program in America. So I was only beginning my program, and as part of my finishing up with Teen Challenge in Ireland, I decided I was going to go to New York, and the connections happened to be Walter Hoven home in New York. So I arrived, never been to America before, and as part of my program finishing up, I went to the Walter Hoven home. And Billy, you were a little bit mean.
And I was done.
I was like, 55 women, this girl caught my eye. Yeah.
But when you came, I was doing an internship, so I shouldn't have been mean at this stage.
Yeah.
And you ended up, out of everyone in the home, you ended up being, flatmates? What would you call it, roommates?
Well, towards the end of my time down in New York, I had a few weeks left, and you're like, oh, you're going to move in with Billy now. And I was like... Billy. And we seemed to hit it off straight away, and we talked, and then Billy said, I'm going to come to Ireland, and we ended up sharing a one-bed apartment in Kilmeag in Kildare.
Yeah. And that's how I met you. And for anyone may not even know Gillian's story, but we met at the end of her program. I was 17 years old, and I remember we only started going out end of December, and she told me she's moving to America, which I was devastated. And but we used to always write to each other letters. And then she came back with you. I was like, okay, hello, nice to meet you. And so you know, and I asked you earlier on when we were talking, because we were talking about reminiscing, what made you move to Ireland?
Well, when I was there, there was a Shechem House in, I think it's Newbridge, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's Newbridge.
Alan and Barbara Sweetman, they were coming over to Ireland, and they were looking for a volunteer to go back to volunteer in their woman's home for a year. And I was like, never even really heard of Ireland.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll go, not thinking anything of it. And all of a sudden, I was getting my driver's license, a passport, and I was 28 years old and never had a driver's license or passport.
Right.
And it just all, everything happened, the doors opened, and here I was.
Excellent.
And you haven't left?
No.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about that then. You came to Ireland.
I came to Ireland.
Single.
And
you met a man, an Irish man.
Yes,
a great man, a part of Open Arms. And you, of course, you came into Open Arms at that same time as well. So tell us, you met Lemuel.
I did. Your beautiful wife over there introduced me to my husband. Now, we used to talk over in America about you and Lem. And
we had a plan.
We did. And then when I came over, I met him through Gillian, and then she had to get her car fixed.
That's right, yeah.
So I went with her. And
was that the time we were on the horse?
No, you went on the horse.
Oh,
I stepped in cow stuff on your pink suede boots.
Yes.
So we went over, and I was looking out the window, and Lem was in the bonnet, and all I saw was his arms, and I was like, he's going to be my husband. Oh. And that's it.
The arms.
Lem will be watching now. Like those arms, he's proud of them. And so you got together, you got married, and you began to start a family.
We did.
So tell us a little bit about that. Your very first child.
Our very first child. We got married in October, and we were pregnant with our first little girl in January. It was little Christmas when I found out, and Emma was born September 1st, 2006. So that was our first baby.
Wow.
Yeah. And we were living in a little cottage, and then we moved to Port Arlington.
Right.
After she was 6 months.
And so this is the part in the story that I think will impact people the most, because tell us a little bit about what happened with Emma and the journey that you guys went through.
Right. After Emma, we went on and had four more babies. So when Emma was 3 and a half, nearly four, we found out she had a brain tumor, and we rang the hospital. She was on a waiting list, but then she started getting sick with the headaches, no fever. So I knew straight away, I knew what it was. I just knew in my heart. So we rang the hospital, and they took her straight away and did a CT scan, and the nurse came in. She had a brain tumor. So we went to Crumlin or Temple Street first, and they told us that she had 25% chance of survival.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. So we were like, all right, what do we do with this? So we took, but I have to say this, and I'm only sharing this recently, that when she was born, God spoke to me and said, enjoy her, because you won't have her long.
Mm.
And I never knew what that meant until she got the tumor. And then I was like, right, this is it. So she did about a year and a half of treatment of chemotherapy in Crumlin. So me and Lem would take shifts. He would drive down with the others. We'd swap over, go back home for 2 days. We'd do two nights each. And then on August 9th, 2000, and I can't remember the year. It was the day that Katie Taylor won the gold medal. I know that, though. Emma got the all clear from the cancer.
Yes.
So we were like, praise the Lord. Because in the beginning, surgery wasn't an option. But then she was it got so small that they could. But then I couldn't be excited. Mm-hmm. Everyone else was all excited, but I knew it wasn't over. Mm. So in 2014, it was the twins' first birthday, so 2014.
Just to go back for a second, right? Because not to skip over too quickly, because, you just even said every two nights you and Lem were going backwards, going back and forth. And I remember that season like it was yesterday. It was the height of the recession. Lem had to step away from his job. Like, you were full time caring for this child.
Yeah.
And we've been in and out of the hospital the last 2 years, you know, on occasion. We know the toll it takes, but we might be like 7 days, 10 days at a time. You were there for a year and a half. What was that like, the stress of it and the toll it took?
It was really hard, but I think because I had my faith and I knew that no matter what happened, that we would get through it.
Mm.
It just, we had such peace about everything through the whole entire time that it took a toll on our marriage, as though, because we couldn't see each other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it took a big toll with that. And then we were both stressed. And then when we would get to see each other, we had the other kids.
Yeah.
So it was.
And four young babies.
Yeah. We were like ships in the night.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you guys are obviously, you're here, and you're still together, you and Lem, and you got to be commended for that, because to go through that is just incredible. What was the thing that kept you as a couple, as a marriage, during that season and during that time?
Well, I think we had God in the center, and sometimes we would not look to Him, but to each other, but we just stuck through it. And then when she got the all clear, we were like, all right, it's over. But the story didn't end there.
So tell us about that then. So you knew, everyone was celebrating, we were celebrating, but you knew something was not right.
Well, she started deteriorating fast, and she was real thin. She couldn't breathe. So we were back and forth and back and forth at Port Leash and Crumlin hospitals. And they just kept saying, it's asthma. Yeah. It's asthma. And I knew it was no more asthma. I knew it wasn't asthma. So we finally got a doctor in Temple Street. And she said, we're going to do a biopsy of her lungs and get to the bottom of this. And I just said to the doctor, could this kill her? And she said, if she winds up in the PICU, it's not good. Mm. So I was like, all right. So we were in the process of waiting for the biopsy of the lungs, and in that time she just faded. So it was a Sunday night, we were celebrating the twins' birthday, and she was sitting on the couch, and I was like, no. So the next day, the next morning, we took her to Port Leash, and they did a CT scan, and we were rushed to Crumlin with police escort in the ambulance to Crumlin Hospital. And 3 weeks she was in the PICU, and she was happy, and she had her oxygen, and she was happy with her little pigtails. And then on June 25th, 2014, she passed away.
Wow. Incredible. And that time, that season, watching you guys go through it, and grieving with you, and going through and suffering and seeing that, but seeing also how strong you were, not just for you and your husband, but also for your other children. And what was that like at that time, having your other children around you, and them seeing you go through that? What was that like for you?
I knew I had to keep going for them. But to be honest, when I had to break down, I broke down in front of them.
Yeah.
Because they have to see that this is real life.
Yeah.
But they kept us going, because we knew we had to just deal with what's happening now and the support we had from everyone after she died and at the funeral and everything. And it was just, I had peace, mm-hmm. I think, because I knew she was all better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No more suffering, nothing. She was all mm-hmm. better up there running around with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And like, at the end of the day, that's all you want. Yeah. At the end.
Because as a mother, your heart breaks when your child even has chicken pox. Yeah. So I can't imagine how that was for you watching your little girl get all these tests. I remember we just came back from South Africa and I went up to Crumlin to see you. And I went into Emma and she was on this big machine and it was filtering her blood. I never can get that image out of my head. How it must have felt, now that I have my own kids, how it must have felt for you to watch your little daughter be getting her Freddies in, her Freddies cleaned, her blood. Like, that's hard, isn't it? So yeah. You must have felt some sort of relief when, like you say, she's with the Lord. And
Yeah, I did. Mm. And I felt guilty for feeling that relief.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't tell anyone that I feel this, mm-hmm. except Lem, because he would understand. Mm-hmm. But it was like, thank God she's okay now.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have to be hooked up to these machines. And mm-hmm. especially now with COVID,
yeah,
I'd be a mess.
Yeah.
So she's happy now. And it, I know people say, oh, it gets easier as time goes on. And I used to think in the beginning, but it, because God heals your heart, mm-hmm. the longer your heart gets healed each year that passes.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, her 13th birthday, she should have started secondary school.
Yeah, there are all things the milestones, that, yeah, yeah.
But I have peace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I love that because, you know, the fact that you have that hope that others don't have.
Yeah.
And you have that faith and that assurance, knowing she's healed now.
Yeah.
She's whole now.
Yeah.
She is in heaven.
Yeah.
She is with Jesus. And of course, you want her here and you want her now, but you know she is happy.
Yeah.
And that you will see her.
Yeah.
And I think that's just really important. And we can brush over that as Christians. And it can be easy to say, but to experience it and go through it, and you did that.
Mm.
That's incredible. Mm. That really, really is incredible.
Sean and I was we were talking on the topic of resilience this week, and anytime that word comes up, you come to mind. You know, I've known you for 15 years, and you know, I've seen the trials and the tests you've gone through. I've seen you lose your firstborn daughter, and honestly, you're the most real person I've in my life. You're my inspiration because I've seen you with such resilience, and you've pressed through, and you've kept your faith. So many people, when we're faced with suffering and pain, we tend to let go of the Lord or push family aside. And you know, you are someone in my life that I want to be like you. I want that resilience. I want to press forward the way you do. And you know, your testimony and your story, even being willing to share it and not keep it for yourself,
is amazing. I appreciate you saying that a lot. That means a lot to me, because you don't think that.
Yeah.
That anyone, not that you need people to see that do you know what I mean? Like, but to know that people do see that you can get through this and that you, you know, like I broke and I made a lot of mistakes when she died.
Yeah.
But I didn't stay in them.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing.
And I never questioned God ever throughout the whole thing. Mm. I never said why. Never.
Mm.
Because he had a reason, and I don't need to know.
You're a living example of being in pain and suffering, but still walking forward and going forward and pressing forward. And we've always, myself and Sean, have seen that in yourself and Lem, with all the trials and the tests. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And just even thinking over this whole period, like, what has it been, 9-10 years, you know, from the beginning to now?
Yeah.
And you guys have been committed to God and faithful and to the church, you know, and always there. And there's been periods where falling away, but come back again. Mm-hmm. Like you say, I didn't stay there.
Yeah.
And I think that this season that we're going through is so important to hear your story, because we have these past 8 months and people's lives, including ours at times, have fallen apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's been 8 months. We're going to get through this.
Yeah.
You know, you have been going back and forth, but you've stayed through it the entire time. What do you think is that one thing that kept you keep coming back, keep coming back to the Lord, to church, to being with him.
Because I knew that he kept me from the time I was born, even when I wasn't a Christian, looking back at my life to this day. So if I walked away from him, my life would fall apart.
Mm.
So I just started, I wasn't always faithful in my Bible reading and devotions and doing it with the kids, but I started to do that over this 8 months.
Yeah.
And getting in my word every day, doing Bible study with the kids when they go, but they still do it.
Mm.
And I need to be examples to them, an example to my kids, that it's okay to go through things, but hold on to God.
Yeah.
Because I try to tell my Lexi, just write it in your journal and just ask God, ask God. But what if he don't answer me? Just keep praying.
Yeah.
That's what I tell her.
That's so good. Keep praying.
Keep praying.
Keep going.
Because kids watch what we do, don't they? They watch how we react. They watch how we respond to certain situations. Yeah. That's amazing.
So I think there's two types of people that are going to hear this message right now and hear this story that need to receive it. And the first group of people for me is the people who are maybe suffering and struggling, but rather than staying in that place, need to learn how to be grateful for who they are and where they are, because that changes our perspective.
Yeah.
And you can hear in you, you've got this gratefulness, you've got this relief. And myself and Jillian, like I said, with Isaac, I've had many experiences, just, you know, last week being there for five days, five nights. And when you're in Crumlin Hospital and you're around sick children, you got to come away. I'm not there right now. I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful that he's healthy. I'm so grateful. And I think there's so many people who have allowed themselves fall into this pattern of in the hurt and the pain, to allow that to grip them so much, they've lost the gratefulness.
Mm. Mm.
And I really hope that they can hear that message come through. But the other group of people, I'm being sensitive to that, who have are suffering right now, who are in grief, who may be in the middle of what you have gone through or what you're going through, how would you encourage that group of people?
I would just say, hold on to, if you have any kind of faith at all, hold on to that and hold on to God. And if you don't know him, please try to get to know Jesus, because he's the only way that you can get through these things in your life. That you don't, yes, you can fall apart, that's fine, but you have to get back up again.
Yeah.
You can't stay down.
Yeah.
Because I had moments where I would just feel sorry for myself, but you can't do that. You have to hold on to any kind of faith you have, but get to know Jesus. That might sound like a cliche or whatever, but that's what got me and my husband through, and that's why we're still together. Because God chose Lem to be my husband, because he knew that he was the only one that could deal with me. But just hold on to hope that it will get better. That might sound like a cliche as well, but it does get better.
It does.
It does.
It's been proven in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's still going to get better.
Yeah.
You never forget, but you learn to live, don't you, a little bit better with it. I remember when we lost, I was pregnant with my first baby, and we lost the baby.
Mm.
And I said to Sean, I just felt pain and hopelessness, because it's your first, and you've bought the furniture, and you're excited, and you've put on Facebook and all of this stuff. And it's like, and I remember being told that the baby had died, and I was like, Sean, how do people go through life suffering and do it without Jesus, without faith? Because at the time when I felt like my life was falling apart, he was the only thing I could cling to.
Yeah.
And I was clinging, because you know what it's like. It's that level of despair that you can feel as a human being, you know, and
and it is literally clinging.
Like, it is.
You get your fists and you cling. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how people do it without the Lord. Yeah.
So as we finish, you have a scripture you want to share with us.
I was just reading in Psalm 116 the other day, and it just, in Psalm 116 it says, I love the Lord, for he heard my voice. He heard my cry for mercy. Because he turned his ear to me, I will call on him as long as I live. And then this, it says, return to your rest, my soul, for the Lord has been good to you. For you, Lord, have delivered me from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling, that I may walk before the Lord in the land of the living. Mm. And that just spoke to me like so bam, smack in the face. And it doesn't happen that often, but I was just like, thank you, Lord, that you've kept my feet from stumbling.
Amen. Well, we love you guys. We're so grateful for you. And you and Lem are to be commended. And I know the Lord is proud of you. And and we love Lexi and LJ and Ellie and Lacey. And we'll be praying for them and holding them in our hearts. And we know that they're going to grow up to be strong men and women who have strong parents to go through what you've gone through. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you so much. Thank you. Love you guys.
Thank you. Well, anyone, you know, who has been impacted by this, I really hope that this has blessed you and encouraged you. And I hope you hear the message. Keep going. Don't give up. Keep going and cling on to Jesus. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.